I hear the wolf at the door. I've seen his face before. He's hungry and I'm tired. Can't keep him out much more. And through a chink in the blind, I watch him pace a line. I better step back from the window. He's only biding his time. Spring follows winter, sun follows shower. Things will get better if only I can hold that wolf at bay. Drive. Still in the race, I'm marking down the time till I can get to a better place. Spring follows winter, sun follows shine.
Sarah McQuaid performing live in our studio on Live and Local here on FM 90.9. She is going to be performing on the Piper's Hut Concert Series, a series in Champaign-Urbana, which focuses on traditional acoustic Celtic music. The performance will be tonight at 8 o'clock at the IMC, or the Independent Media Center, which is located in what used to be the post office building. There's actually still a post office in part of the building, right next to Lincoln Square Mall in downtown Urbana. And Sarah's actually making a return appearance on Live and Local. I'd actually sort of partly forgotten that.
You had.
Until, of course, I'm seeing you sing right in front of me.
Oh. And then you remembered?
And then I remembered. Well, I remembered during the conversation. I tend to get mixed up sometimes when I do so many phone interviews that I often think the people are here.
Right.
And then it happens the other way around, too, that because I do so many phone interviews, sometimes I think somebody who was here was on the phone. But in any event,
I'm here.
You're here and you're back, and we're very glad that that has happened. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me on the program again.
Yeah, where were you playing last night?
Last night was a night off. It was the first night off I'd had in ages, because we kind of hit the ground running on this tour. We flew in from London to Dallas on Tuesday, and on Wednesday night I had a gig in Oklahoma City, and on Thursday night I had a gig in Tulsa, and on Friday night I had a gig in St. Louis, and on Saturday night I had a gig in Chicago, and on Sunday night I had a gig in Livonia, Michigan, just outside Detroit. So I was really happy that I didn't have a gig last night.
Yeah,
I went to Chicago, which is really nice because I grew up there, and I lived in Chicago from the age of 2 until 13, and so it was really nice. We went to visit an old friend of my mother's, and we had a really nice walk along the lake shore, and we went out for sushi, which was just gorgeous. So it was a real treat.
Well, I mean, just the fact that you were born in Chicago, or rather spent so much time of your formative years in Chicago,
yeah,
is just a part of your biography, which is part of what's interesting about you, too. Certainly from a biographical point of view, born in Spain.
In Spain. My father was Spanish.
And then quickly to Chicago. Was that where your mom was from?
Yeah, my mother was from Chicago originally. And she'd been living abroad for, most of her adult life before I was born. She'd lived in France for a long time, and she'd lived in Greece for a bit and Italy for a bit, and she lived in Spain for 5 years. And then when I was, I think, 18 months old, she decided to come on back to Chicago. And so we went to live in Chicago then. And then when I was 13, we moved to Washington, D.C. And then I wound up going to college just outside Philadelphia. And then she and my stepfather, who's English, moved to England. And I stayed on in Philadelphia for a little bit, and then moved to Ireland, lived in Ireland for 13 years, and then moved 6 years ago now to Cornwall.
So what was the reason for your mom's moving around so much?
I don't know. She just was one of these bohemian characters in the 50s and 60s who she played guitar and sang, and she painted, and she told me she used to, this was back in the days when the rate of exchange was really good and you could do this. She told me she used to work as a waitress for 6 months in the USA, and then she could go over and live for a few years in Europe on the money that she'd earned being a waitress for 6 months in the USA. I don't think you can do that anymore, you know?
But it must have
been nice. It must have been nice. She was studying as well. She was studying the way she met my father was that he was teaching in the Escuela de Bellas Artes de San Fernando, which is an art college in Madrid, and she was studying painting there.
And but he didn't come to Chicago?
No. I actually never met him.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't even really know what he looks like. I went to Spain to dig out. I found out that there was a biography of him published and that they had a copy of it in the university library in Barcelona. And so I went, because I'd found out that he had died, he died when I was in my teens, I think. And so I went to look up this biography of him, mostly because I thought, well, surely there's going to be a picture of him in the biography, you know, there's bound to be, isn't there? And I thought, I want to have a holiday in Barcelona. Anyway, this is when I was living in Dublin and, you know, I got a cheap flight to Barcelona and went to the library and got the biography out and photocopied it, but they had lots of pictures of his paintings, but the only picture they had of him, he was looking down. You couldn't see his eyes. He was looking down, and it's amazing. I mean, I think it was kind of seeing that made me try and think, gosh, I've really always got to try and keep my eyes open while I'm singing. Because you really, it's when people's eyes are closed, it's really hard to kind of get a sense of them and even get a sense of what they look like. It's funny that.
Does the unknown father ever show up in your music?
No. Weirdly, it should. It probably should. It may be a while before I can get my head around that. I mean, it took a long time. I think it was years after my mother died that I finally got myself, you know, in a fit state of mind to write a song for her. You know, so it'll probably take even longer before I can do anything. And I don't know. I mean, I think the thing is, even if you do write songs about your personal experience, it has to be something that somebody else can relate to, that somebody else can kind of take on board and go, well, I feel this is about my life in some way, you know, that because if you're just writing songs for yourself and about your own life, well, that's no good at all. Other people have to be able to relate to it. So that's what I always try and do.
Of course, not every songwriter feels that way.
Do you think?
Yeah, well, I know, actually.
Oh, you know, because you've interviewed them.
Because I've interviewed
them. And what do they say? I'm curious.
Well, see, now you're going to test me, but I have one person particularly in mind who actually is around here, and most of his songs seem to be from really direct experience of the sort that I would imagine many listeners would be really uncomfortable with. Because it's they address issues of mental disturbance and mental illness, not only his own to a certain degree, but also of people that he's worked with. I mean, not that no names are pop out in there, but I've talked to people who really find that they relate to these songs in some way or another.
Well, that's good then.
So, you know, I suppose it. I mean, I've always been curious about why a songwriter would or would not touch their own experience. I mean, for example, the song that you just sang sounds like it could have come from a personal place of some sort.
Yeah.
Or it could be hypothetical place.
I guess when I wrote it, I was thinking of my own life. It was the phrase, "The wolf is at the door," kept coming to my head for obvious reasons. It's just when you're struggling with, I mean, playing music for a living is not an easy way to make a living. It's really tough, and you're constantly kind of struggling with that, and you're constantly kind of moving the debt around so that it's not, you know, you're sort of going, oh, well, I can pay this if I take this out of that, and then that can wait a little bit longer, and you know you're always sort of juggling, you're basically juggling your creditors and trying to keep one step ahead, and sometimes it starts getting really desperate, and that's when I say, God, well, the wolf is at the door. But then at the same time, the phrase "the sun goes on rising" came to me because I was thinking, well, even though in my life I feel like disaster is imminent, well, what's really going to happen if I can't pay my bills and, you know, the worst happens. What's the worst that can happen? The sun keeps rising, the grass gets, you know, the world goes on. And what happens in my individual life is kind of, you know, pretty infinitesimal by comparison with sort of the great things that happen, you know, in the world and on the planet. And, you know, and then our, you know, if you want to get really philosophical about it, our little planet is only one tiny bit of this giant, you know, sort of cosmos. So, sorry, that's probably too philosophical for 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Well, but, and all that's, on all that stuff being true enough, it's still your life.
Yeah.
And it still is where it is. And, you know, when you're, if the wolf is indeed always at the door, one could easily ask, well, why not do something else?
Oh, because I love what I do, and because there's always hope. I mean, I used to work as a journalist before I became a full-time musician. And when I was a journalist, I was pretty miserable a lot of the time. I was in the office all day. I didn't see my kids. I mean, you might laugh, thinking, you know, seeing my kids now, I'm away for 8 weeks.
I was going to ask you about that, actually.
But the funny thing is, when I was working a full-time job and the kids were in daycare all day, and I would pick them up in the evening, you know, go off to work in the morning, deposit them at you know, 7 in the morning and go off to work and work all day and collect them in the evening and then all big rush getting food on the table and everything like that and get them to bed. And then the weekends rushing around trying to get errands done and things like that, you know. And I really felt like I was missing out. And it was my husband, actually, who said, well, you know, why don't you go back to playing music? And I said, well, you know, if I did, I'd have to go on tour because in this, you know, sort of singer-songwriter acoustic music scene, there isn't a local market. It's not like playing in a covers band where you can get a gig in your local bar every weekend or in an orchestra where you have a steady job. It's you have to tour, otherwise you can't do it. And I said, I'd have to tour. And he said, well, you know, at least when you were at home, we'd see you. He said, we don't see you now. Even though you're at home, we don't see you. So so I said, all right. And it's true. Right now what I do is I kind of do a 3 months on, 3 months off thing. So I just had, before I started this, the UK leg of this tour is both UK and USA, and it started on the 31st of August. But before it started, I had 3 fairly solid months at home. I went away to do a couple of festivals over the summer, but that was just kind of away for 2 days at a time, a few times over the summer. And other than that, I got to be home all day, every day with my kids and go out and do stuff and go for walks. And, you know, so that was just great. And then when I'm on tour, I love being on tour, too. I love all the people I get to meet and everything. And you see, with music, with journalism, there was always a limit, you know, and I'd kind of reached that limit. I was editor of a magazine, and there wasn't a lot. And in fact, I was by the time I left, I was managing editor of a little group of magazines. And that was as far as it was ever going to go, you know, really. There wasn't a whole lot to aspire to beyond that. Whereas with music, there's always the chance that you're going to get that one song, you know, that one song. I mean, I have a neighbor that I made an album with, actually, Zoe. I made the Mama album with her, and she had a hit single in 1991, and it's kept her nicely ever since, just one song. So there's always hope, at least, with music.
I'm gathering that hasn't happened then yet.
No hit single just yet.
Do you have a candidate that if you were going to nominate one of your songs for your personal hit single, what it might be?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it's funny, like it's hard to be a really good judge of your own music.
I guess if you were, you'd have a hit single.
Yeah.
Or
yeah, I guess
many.
So. I guess so. Or maybe, and I think a lot of it's not so much the song itself as just it takes the right person to hear it at the right time and go, oh yeah, I want to use that song for XYZ, and then bingo, you go.
Well, what about a song that you have the sense that your listeners might nominate?
Well, there is one song. Actually, I can play it for you now if I can get my guitar into tune again. I've just
moved my capo.
That's what
I was leading up to.
Yeah, yeah. There's a song I can play for you now that I remember. I played it at one concert, and I had just introduced one of the songs that I wrote with Zoe, and told about, you know, how I was still trying to get that one song, you know, and I played this song that I'm about to play, and somebody from the audience shouted out, well, that's one. Now, I don't know. It's kind of an old-fashioned song, so I don't know if it would really, really make it on kind of radio now. But it's kind of an old-fashioned love song. And when I wrote it, I decided to have a blast at using an old-fashioned song structure because I really like the way people like Cole Porter and George Gershwin and Rodgers and Hart and all those great Golden Age songwriters, they always had a thing at the start of the song called the verse, which is
it's usually the part that people forget.
Yeah, it's the part that people forget. It's the part that gets left out a lot of the time, which is a real shame. I mean, I love the verses to those songs like My Funny Valentine. You hear it now, and people always start right in with My Funny Valentine. But there's a whole bit at the front that goes, behold the way our fine feathered friend his beauty doth parade. Da, 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 and it goes on like that for a bit. And then the song proper starts. Same with Blue Moon. There's a bit at the beginning of Blue Moon that nobody sings.
And of course, nobody knows what the song is. They think, oh, it's a new song until...
Yeah, then you get the song proper and people go, oh, yeah, that song, you know.
So this one has a verse.
So this one has a verse, yeah. And the song is called What Are We Gonna Do? I didn't know that kiss was coming. I guess I could have started running. Soon as I saw what you were thinking, it serves me right, I shouldn't have been drinking.
But anyway, you did. So let's consider, what are we gonna do about it? This little thing that you and me have started. Tonight is not enough. I might just fall in love with you. What are we gonna do? I wouldn't say that this was unexpected. If you hadn't kissed me, I'd regret it. 'Cause when you leaned my way, I couldn't turn my face from you. What are we gonna do? This could be the edge of something dangerous too. Right now it's all new. I don't know what way to play it. In the light of day, we might not make it. I don't know if it's real. Don't know how to deal with you. What are we gonna do? What are we gonna do? This little thing that you and me have started. Tonight is not enough. I might just fall in love with you. What are we gonna do?
Sarah McQuaid, live on Live and Local here on FM 90.9. The show's your connection to local performances, and she will be performing tonight at 8 o'clock at the Independent Media Center in downtown Urbana, a song called What Are We Gonna Do? Our program today is made possible by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, inviting the community to explore the treasure of our ecosystem and envision our global future through Brenda Wong Aoki's Moo, One World, One Ocean, on Friday, October 4th at 7 p.m. For more information, visit krannertcenter.com. And we are actually hoping to have a conversation with Brenda Wong Aoki and one of her colleagues in the next couple of days here on Live and Local, and let you know a little bit more about what that particular show is about. I did read that they say it's appropriate for folks ages 8 and up. So that'll be something to explore. How long ago was it that you wrote that song?
What Are We Gonna Do?
Yeah.
I wrote it the summer before I recorded the most recent. So I wrote it around about 2008. That song.
So it hasn't become the big hit yet, but
no.
Maybe this will do it. Maybe this little broadcast.
Wouldn't that be nice?
There's a lot of, wouldn't that be nice? So that was an old-fashioned love song.
Yeah.
Not a form you gravitate to very often?
No. I mean, I really like the form, but that was kind of my crack at it, you know, that song. I might try and write a song with the verse again. It was something I really had fun doing. You know?
Do you have particular forms that you tend to put your songs in, or is each song more or less free form?
Every song has a structure, but the structure kind of decides what it's going to be as the song goes on, as I'm writing the song. Because I used to, back when I was first writing songs years ago, I used to think that every song had to have, you know, two verses, a chorus, and a middle eight, you know, and maybe a bit of an intro and an outro. And then when I moved to Cornwall, I met up with the woman I mentioned earlier, Zoe, and who had the hit single. And she and I started writing songs together. For an album that we released eventually as a duo under the band name Mama, and the album was called Crow, Coyote, Buffalo, and got great reviews. One reviewer described us as two pagan goddesses channeling the ghost of Jim Morrison via 60s acid folk.
I can't even follow that.
Waggling your head there. and the Irish Times, said that we had the freewheeling spirit of Janis Joplin and the lyrical density of Joni Mitchell. I'm not actually sure what lyrical density is, but anyway. But Zoe and I, we co-wrote all of those songs, and they were really were collaborations in the fullest sense of the word. A lot of the time she'd just have maybe a little phrase or something, and she'd have an idea of what the song might be about, and then I'd start fleshing out some lyrics, and then she'd mostly I did a lot of lyrics and she did a lot of melodies. But one thing she taught me is that a song didn't have to have two verses, a chorus, and a middle eight, that a song could have all sorts of different structures. And as long as there's a structure there and a progression there, and, you know, as long as it kind of builds up to something, it doesn't matter what direction it. It can have a bit at the beginning, like those old-fashioned songs, and then that doesn't happen again. It can have a bit at the end, like an outro that only comes in at the end of the song, and it only comes in once, you know. And it can have, as long as the bits kind of make sense, and as long as you can kind of feel a progression and feel a sense of building. Then it's okay, and you can use any structure you want.
I think you said just before that the structure helps determine the song.
The song helps determine the structure. Yeah, as you're writing the song, and as you're kind of formulating lyrics, you might find that you're just writing. Three verses, and that's all the song's going to be. It's just going to be three verses. Or you might think there's a bit that kind of cries out to be repeated a bit, and, well, maybe that's going to be your chorus. Or maybe it's not going to be a chorus. Maybe there's just going to be an A part and a B part, you know, so it can go lots of different ways. And then sometimes after you've written a song, you suddenly go, there's something missing here. I think the song needs another part. I think there has to be a bit that we go into between this part and that part, you know. So it kind of determines itself sometimes they get changed right at the point. And I've had the experience of playing songs out in concert for like 2 years, and then going into the studio to record them, and the producer goes, "Well, you know what? I had a producer once say I needed to completely rewrite the melody for a song, which I did. And it turned into a better song, but that was a song I'd been performing. And same with another song that I thought I'd finished, and then I got to the studio, and then the whole thing changed around. But I think that's good. I think a song's never finished until you've kind of committed it to recording, and even then you might change it. I mean, look at Bob Dylan. Didn't he change songs like crazy after recording them, to the great annoyance of his listeners some of the time?
Well, yeah, those listeners who want to hear the song as they learned it. Well, I mean, you said, I think that's good if your song improves for the better at somebody else's suggestion, but is that your first reaction? I mean, if a producer says, you got to change the melody of that song, do you just say, okay? Do you say, oh, yeah? Why?
Well, I say okay, but it's not really okay. It's more like okay. You know, I remember when the song that I referred to earlier, it's a song called Last Song that I've been finishing all my gigs with on this tour. I recorded it on the second album on I Won't Go Home Till Morning. And I remember when I went in to record it, and Jerry said, those are really good lyrics. Jerry O'Byrne, wonderful Irish singer, songwriter, and instrumentalist who produced all three of my solo albums. He said, those are really good lyrics, but they deserve a better melody than that. I think you can write a better melody than that. Go home and write a better melody than that, and then come in tomorrow and we'll record it. And I remember I went back to where I was staying. I was staying with a friend in Dublin where we were doing the recording, and I just cried. You know, I was so miserable. I was like, I can't do it. I can't do something better, you know. And then I did, and it was much better.
And you did it that night?
Yeah, I did it that night. Yeah.
You know, this sort of listening to you talk about structuring a song and going back and editing a song, essentially.
Yeah.
And then in this case, writing on deadline.
Yeah.
I wonder if you've ever really stopped being a journalist.
Possibly not. That's an interesting. Nobody's ever said that to me before, but I think you're right. I think I probably haven't ever really stopped being a journalist. But that kind of you got to do this now. That kind of responding well to pressure. You know, it's when, and I suppose that's part of what I like about performing is when you're on stage and the audience is in front of you, the pressure's on. You must perform. You can't go, oh, you know what? I don't really feel like doing a gig right now. I think I'll do a gig later. You know, you can't do that.
Some people do. Tell you about yesterday's radio show. No.
Oh, no.
No, it's all right. It was fine. It was actually a really nice show. It just wasn't the show I thought it was going to be.
Oh, okay.
For various reasons. But, well, we should let you do another song. We're talking about songs. We should
okay.
let you do one. I suppose you brought in sort of a loose playlist. For today.
I've been sort of making it up in my head as I go along. I thought since we've been talking so much about songwriting, I really ought to do a song that I didn't write.
Well, I was going to ask you about that too, because I did read that you do a lot of covers, so to speak.
Yeah, I
do. Of different sorts.
And the one that's coming into my head, actually, because I think it's a good example of a song structure that doesn't kind of conform exactly to the sort of standard song structure, but I think it is a definite structure and it really, really works beautifully, is a song that was written by John Martin, and I recorded this on my third album on The Plum Tree and the Rose, which came out last year on
which
the...
Which is a beautiful album.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much. Came out last year on the Waterbug label, which is based in Chicago and is a really, really nice record label. I'm so honored and happy to be on it. It's run by a really great guy called Andrew Calhoun, who's a musician himself. And he basically started up the label kind of as an artist's cooperative, pretty much, to do the things that you really need a record company to do, like, you know, get stuff onto Amazon for you and get distribution into shops and things like that. And, you know, have a website and an online presence and stuff like that. But he's not in it for the money at all. In fact, I think he probably loses money on the enterprise, maybe covers his expenses and that's about it. But he does it because he just really, really loves the music. And there's a lot of really good artists on the label, which I feel really chuffed and honored to be affiliated with. I used the word chuffed just now. Somebody told me the other day that I suppose I've lived in England so long, and before that Ireland, I get used to the different way of using language there, and so I use words without realizing that they're specifically English words. Chuffed means pleased and delighted, and yesterday I can't remember who we were talking to, but she said that a musician she knew had covered a song by an English artist. Who wrote to the English artist saying, you know, we're going to cover your songs. I hope that's okay. And got a message back saying, I'm really chuffed that you're covering my song. And like didn't know what it meant and was really worried. And I was like, oh my gosh, does chuffed mean really annoyed, you know?
It sounds more likely to be annoyed than at least
it doesn't.
To
it
my
means,
ear.
Chuffed means really happy. Right. And really kind of pleased, really proud, you know, like, oh, I'm chuffed. Yeah. They said that about me. Ooh, that's nice, you know. So that's chuffed. There you go. And so the song is called Solidaire, and it was written by John Martin about Nick Drake, who's another big musical hero of mine. So it's kind of nice that I get to pay tribute to the two of them in one song, and here it is.
Taking your time and you've been living on solid air. You've been walking your line and you've been living on solid air. I don't know what's going on inside, but I can tell you that it's hard to hide when you're living on solid air. Solid air. I don't know what's going wrong in your mind, but I can tell that you don't like what you find when you're looking through solid air. I know you, I love you, I could be a friend, I could follow you anywhere. I don't know what's going on inside, but I can tell you that it's hard to hide when you're living on solid air. I know you, I love you, I could be your friend, I could follow you. Too deep, and you've been moving through solid air. You've been missing your sleep, and you've been moving through solid air. I don't know what's going wrong in your mind, but I can tell that you don't like what you find when you're moving through solid air. I could be your friend, I could follow you anywhere, even through solid air. Ice blue, solid air, nice.
That's a beautiful song. It's not one I know. Should I?
Yeah, well, John Martin, it was on, trying to think which album of his. It's on the album called Solid Air. Yeah, it was the title track of an album. And it was kind of in that sort of golden period that came kind of after, you know, May You Never and before And, which is this sort of slightly more, I don't know, left of center album. But yeah, it's I don't know that it's been covered very much, but certainly John Martin's recording of it is a powerful recording, beautiful song.
When you cover a song, either a well known or not, do you tend to do it more or less straight, or do you consider that you really give it your interpretation?
Well, I have to put my own style and interpretation onto it, because if I don't, then there's that, you know, then there's no point in covering it. People might as well listen to the, if I don't bring something new to the song, then people might as well just listen to the original, you know. So I have to bring something new and different to it, but I don't mess, you know, I don't mess about with the words or the melody or the structure. Apart from anything else, I'm not allowed to do that without getting the permission of the artist, who is deceased in this particular case. So I couldn't. But anyway, I think, I don't want to mess with the integrity of the song. But I think that without messing with the integrity of the song, you can still kind of bring your own thing to it, your own, style and feel and everything like that.
We've been talking pretty much exclusively about songs. And I guess before I go where I was going to go, I should remind our listeners that first, this is Live and Local on FM 90.9. And second, my guest today, live in our studio, is Sarah McQuaid, who currently lives in Cornwall. She has lived all kinds of places, including in Chicago for quite a bit of time, and Ireland, to the point where you have dual citizenship between
the States. Very convenient for playing music in different countries.
I imagine. And yeah. She'll be playing tonight on the Piper's Hut Concert Series at the Independent Media Center in downtown Urbana. The show starts at 8 o'clock. And where I was going to go with that is that I noticed in Dean Karras's description of that he put up on the website for the Piper's Hut series that he mentions that you sometimes do instrumentals.
Yeah.
And I don't remember if we had you do that last time.
Ooh.
Ooh.
I haven't practiced an instrumental.
Do they show up in most of your shows or not
well,
necessarily?
Funnily enough, there's an instrumental that I have been doing in a lot of my shows, which actually I've never done it on the radio before, but I could, as a first time for everything. There's an instrumental that I've been doing in a lot of my shows that actually in the current tour, I just started adding some lyrics to it. Because what it is, it's a pair of American old-timey tunes. And it's a pair of American old-timey tunes called Shady Grove and Cluck Old Hen. And I recorded them as a strictly pure instrumental, no vocals. But they do... They do have lyrics. The lyrics are kind of nonsense lyrics. They're kind of there as placeholders, basically, in case the fiddle player doesn't show up to the dance, and somebody has to sing the tune for the dancers to dance to. But they're kind of fun. My poor old guitar has been in and out of so many different climates and temperatures, it really doesn't know whether it's coming or going. It's a beautiful guitar. It was handmade for me by a wonderful luthier called Andy Manson.
You know, I was going to say, it looks like it could well have been handmade. It's got a sort of a shape to it that I haven't seen before, and it rings beautifully. I like just letting it go at the end of all the
song. Yeah, it's gorgeous, isn't it? Andy has made guitars for lots and lots of people far more illustrious than myself. His main client is John Paul Jones from Led Zeppelin. He's made loads of different instruments, about 16 different instruments for John Paul Jones, ranging from guitars to mandolins and all that. And if you ever see pictures of, it's actually Jimmy Page who plays it in the pictures, this wonderful three-necked contraption. It's got a six-string neck and a 12-string neck and a mandolin neck, all coming out at different angles from the body of the guitar. Andy Manson made that, so I'm very, very lucky to have one of his guitars. He wouldn't agree to make me a guitar until he'd seen me play live. Talk about pressure.
I was also wondering, just from a purely economic point of view, if he makes guitars for someone, you know, at that level of the economics of the rock world, does that mean he charged you a fortune or he could afford not to?
I think he could afford not to. Yeah. I think he gave me a break. I mean, it was an expensive guitar, yeah. No question. It was by far the most expensive object that I've ever bought, you know. More expensive than any car I've ever owned, that's for sure. But I suspect that he charges, he probably charges other people more. I think he gave me a break because he knew I couldn't afford too much. So.
Well, we're very glad to have the chance to hear it.
Oh, thank you.
Shady Grove, my honey, Shady Grove, my true love, pretty Shady Grove. Won't get married in the fall, I'll marry in the spring. Marry the pretty girl down the road who wears a diamond ring. Ooh, Shady Grove, my true love, Shady Grove, my honey, Shady Grove, my true love, pretty Shady Grove.
married in the spring, I'll marry in the fall. If I can't marry Shady Grove, I won't get married at all. Shady Grove, my true love, Shady Grove, my honey, Shady Grove, my true love, pretty Shady Grove. A good old hen, she lays eggs for the railroad men, sometimes one and sometimes two, sometimes enough for the whole damn crew. Cluck old hen, cluck and sing, ain't laid an egg since late last spring. Cluck old hen, cluck and squall, ain't laid an egg since late last fall. Good old hen, she lays eggs for the railroad men, sometimes eight and sometimes ten, that's enough for the railroad men. Cluck old hen, cluck and sing, ain't laid an egg since late last spring. Cluck old hen, cluck and squall, ain't laid an egg since late last fall.
Might as well let that guitar ring since we were talking about it. Sarah McQuaid here on Live and Local. She is with me in the studio playing for us live, which is a real, real treat. And there must be, you know, we were talking about covering songs earlier. And when you do a traditional song, I suppose you can't really say you're covering it because it's nobody's song really.
Yeah.
But I've heard so many different versions of Shady Grove,
yeah,
for example.
Oh, yeah, huge numbers, infinite number of versions of that song.
And I guess it all depends who you learned it from or what source you got it
from.
You remember where you got that version?
It was from my mother, actually, believe it or not, in true traditional fashion. Those were the words that she used to sing. So I don't know, you know, whether they're right or I suppose with traditional music, there is no right or wrong. Because I've heard, like, she always sang Shady Grove, my true love, Shady Grove, my honey. But I've heard other people singing Shady Grove, my true love, Shady Grove, I know, or Shady Grove, my dear, or, you know, so.
My darling,
my darling, Shady Grove, my darling.
But even
my honey
tune,
is what my mother sang, yeah.
Even the tune.
The tune's probably a little changed, too.
It's like
too.
Variants.
Yeah. But we used to sing that song on, when we were going on long car journeys, like from, you know, from Chicago to Baltimore to visit my cousins and my aunts and uncles, and we'd always sing that song, and we'd kind of make up verses as we went along. We'd sing different verses. Like there are a bunch more verses that I knew than I say. You know, there's that one, Wish I Had a Great Big House 50 Stories High, and there's the one, Wish I Was in Arkansas Far Away from Here. You know, there's a bunch more verses that are in the song anyway, but we used to start making up verses, Wish I, you know, as we went along.
I asked you, you know, way at the start of this hour, you know, if you're unknown father had ever showed up in your songs, and you said it took you long enough to get your mom into a song somehow or another. But I wonder if she is in your music anyway from her having also been a singer and I assume guitarist.
Yeah. I mean, not professionally. She never played and, you know, sort of kind of performed in public or anything like that. But she always sang and played. And, you know, some of my earliest memories are of she used to sit in the room in the room next to mine and practice her guitar and sing after I'd gone to bed. And I just have this really, really clear, vivid memory of lying in bed, and the door would be it just cracked open a little bit so that the light shone through, because I could never go to sleep I still have trouble going to sleep in a dark room with a closed door. You know, I can do it now, but it took me a long, long time to get to the point where I could do that. And I'd have the door cracked open, and there'd be this lovely little kind of ribbon of light, vertical kind of ribbon of light showing up, and she'd be sitting in the next room and playing her guitar and singing, and I used to call out requests, and that's a really nice memory for me.
That image on its by itself right there, almost, I mean, it sounds like it could easily become a song.
Well, it did.
Did it?
I'm moving my kappa so I can play it for you.
Well, you might as well, yeah.
Yeah, it's when... It's a song that I wrote when I was trying to teach myself how to play guitar again after a long break. And I discovered that the best time to practice was when I just put the kids to bed. And I used to sit kind of in the corridor outside their room and kind of noodle away on the guitar and until silence descended. But there was one evening that silence was taking a very long time to descend. And so I could hear them chatting away to each other. And I said, "Are you still awake?" And I think it probably happens to all of us at some point in our lives that we open our mouth and out of it comes the voice of our mother or father, as the case may be. And it happened to me that night. And so I had to write a song about it. It's called The Last Song.
When I was a little girl, tucked in my bed at night, I'd have the door cracked open and I'd watch that thread of light. I'd listen to my mother as she played her old guitar. I'd say, "Do Froggy went a-courtin' for the next one?" Say, "All right, but now this has to be the last song. Are you still awake? Go to sleep, child. The sun is down, you're safe and sound. The Sandman's on his way. Honey, close your eyes. Time to be quiet now. Do you wake up in the morning and start another day? Well, years have passed and now I'm trying to learn some sweet old tune. In the hall I've got the light on so it shines into your room. Talking to your teddy bears and playing with your dolls. You should have been asleep an hour ago, I'm thinking. Is it my mother's voice or mine that I hear asking? Are you still awake? Go to sleep, child. Sun is down, you're safe and sound. The Sandman's on his way. Honey, close your eyes. Time to be quiet now. Do you wake up in the morning and start another day?" Left this world too soon to ever know you. She never got to see your little face. And I wish with all my heart that she'd lived long enough to hold you, long enough to kiss your cheek and stroke your head and say, are you still awake? Go to sleep, child. The sun is down, you're safe and sound. The Sandman's on his way. Honey, close your eyes. Time to be quiet now. Do you wake up in the morning and start another day?" Another day. Ooh. and he did right. Shrug you and a cordon, and he did right. Sword and pistol by his side.
Last song by Sarah McQuaid, live here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. She'll be at the Independent Media Center in downtown Urbana for a show tonight that starts at 8 o'clock. It's on the Piper's Hut concert series, which you can see in its entirety, meaning you can see what else is coming up yet this fall at the website, which is pipers-hut.com. If you want more information on Sarah McQuaid, is it sarahmcquaid.com?
Oh, yes, it is. Yeah, sarahmcquaid.com.
And if you want to hear this show again, you can do that with the WYLL radio app. If you have an iPhone, iPad, or Android device, the app is free. It allows you to stream our AM and FM stations and listen to past episodes of this show or others whenever you want. For more information about how to find the WYLO radio app in the App Store or Google Play, visit our website at will.illinois.edu. On tomorrow's show, we've got some more live music for you of a very different nature. It's a group, normally a quartet. I think there'll be a trio tomorrow. They call themselves Bones, Jugs, and Harmony, and that probably gives you some idea of what the music could be like if you think about it very long or not very long. This is 90.9 WYLL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music, and more for Central Illinois. We're a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois, and I'm Kevin Kelly. It's been a wonderful hour for us. The Piper's Hut Concert Series, they say they focus on traditional acoustic Celtic music, and I don't know that we've heard any yet.
Yeah, I used to. My first album was mostly Irish music, but the second one I sort of focused more on the American Appalachian stuff that I grew up on, and now I'm kind of mostly writing my own songs. I mean, I do. Trying to think, I don't think I have anything really. I do. I have a Cornish song that counts as Celtic.
It does.
Yeah. It's Rig of Time. I'll be opening the concert with this evening. So yeah, that's one Celtic number that I'll be doing. And you know, if people request stuff, you know, if people request come along wanting to hear something from a specific album, I do it. But Dean's lovely. I mean, I think he doesn't. I remember when he first booked me for the Piper's Hut, I said, "Ooh, well, you know, is your series mostly kind of traditional? You know, am I allowed to do my own songs in it?" And he was like, "Oh yeah, you know that. You know, we just like your music, so come along and play." So I'm really glad that he said that.
You have a minute of an Appalachian tune?
Oh, a minute. Yeah, I'll do. I could do two verses of The Wagoner's Lad. I can't do the whole song because it's
Count
got
right
lots
ahead.
Of verses. Oh, hard is the fortune of all womankind. We're always controlled. We're always confined. Controlled by our fathers until we're made wise. Then slaves to our husbands for the rest of our lives. I can love you right lightly, or I can love long. I can stay with an old love till a new one comes on. I can court him and kiss him and keep him with ease, then turn my back on him and court whom I